Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Good morning. It's Sunday, October 31st, 2021. This is the Sunday Take, and I am Blaise Olson. We have a very full show today. We're going to check in with Representative Angie Craig in Washington. We're going to talk why liquor laws are so hard to change in Minnesota. And then we're going to learn what's really going on in Minneapolis with former Mayor R.T. Ryback. You know, there's a lot going on still in politics, and it seems like most of the world's still tuned out. They're exhausted. But there's one thing we can all do this week. It's vote if there's an election in our local community. I think it's important that we continue to do that. We have a long 1 year before the next election. And I know that the partisanship, the polarization, the lack of progress does get exhausting. But if we vote, continue to engage, and we do the hard work, our democracy and our communities will be better. When we come back, Representative Angie Craig from Washington. You know, for the first cup of coffee on Sunday Take this Sunday, I think it's important we check in on Washington. So joining me now is Representative Angie Craig. Representative Craig, thanks for joining me. I know things are fluid, but it's been a heavy lift or a complex lift to try to get both the infrastructure bill done, the Build Back Better bill, and some of these other complications. What's your sense as, you know, a suburban moderate trying to get these bills done when there's kind of pent up demand from the American public?
Well, Blaise, thanks for having me here on Sunday morning. And you're exactly right. We have to get both of these bills across the finish line. You know, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, it's been sitting there for a while. I've advocated to get it across the finish line to fund our highways, our roads, our bridges, and importantly, broadband. You know, I represent rural areas in addition to a whole lot of suburban moms. But Build Back Better really is transformational. And I don't say that very often, but it's the first time that I can remember in a long time that Washington has really prioritized working folks and middle-class families across our country. And as I think about, you mentioned suburban moms, you know, this bill is going to create a whole lot of new clean energy jobs. This bill is going to reduce the cost of health care. That's, in my opinion, one of the reasons I won in 2018. You had Republicans trying to do away with the Affordable Care Act. We're going to extend premium tax credits. And by the way, Blaise, right now in the framework, in the text they released, not too long ago, reinsurance at the federal level for 3 years.
Okay.
From 2023 to 26. So we'll see where it all ends up. But all that adds up to lowering the cost of health care. And I know a whole lot of suburban moms, dads, and folks in general. We want our kids to be safe. Pre-K has been a big issue, early childhood education in this country. And child care is one of the biggest barriers to getting folks back to work and our economy running. So lots and lots of good stuff for a district like mine. And then I'll just end and let you ask me another question by saying, you talked about me and representing my district. Look, it was never going to be $3.5 trillion. Everyone along the ideological spectrum in the Democratic Party knew that. And I'd rather us spend a few more days ironing out the devil in the details than rush through the Build Back Better Act. So, you know, I think we're going to get there. I really and truly do. And we're going to deliver on President Biden's agenda.
One of the things you said is across the Democratic spectrum and the party. And, you know, again, when you're sitting in Minnesota or you watch this, and, you know, I worked in Congress 30 years ago or 28 years ago when we did the 1993 Budget Reconciliation Act. So I've watched these battles. And But I'd have to understand, or I think it's important for people to understand, while nobody thought it was going to be $3.5 trillion, there seems to be we're making progress. Now there's a wrench in the plans. How does that feel as somebody who does want to push this across? And what do the more progressive members of the caucus tell you as you guys are trying to work out these details of why there always seems to be one more hurdle to get over?
Well, look, I hope I never figure Washington out, Lois, because, you know, that means I've probably been here too long and seen too much. So, look, at the end of the day, here's what it comes down to. And when you say the wrench, I'm going to be candid here. A lot of my progressive colleagues don't trust the Senate. They don't trust two senators to do what they say that the president has said they would do. Okay. And so, you know, I mean, there are things in the bill that I would have, you know, turned the volume down on, things that I am just really not happy about losing. One on the, you know, the investment side with paid family leave, and the other on the offset side, the fact that Big Pharma wins again in this bill, the fact that we're not going to negotiate drug pricing. I haven't quite accepted that we're done with this bill. I'm going to be fighting all the way through the finish line, all the way to the House floor to try to lower the cost of prescription drugs for people. And if for some reason we can't get that done in this bill, look, we need two more senators. Manchin and Sinema can stay in the Democratic caucus. That's just fine. I'd rather have them than the Republican alternative. But, you know, we need two more Senate seats in 2022 to come back and finish this job. And obviously, we need to hold the House of Representatives as well.
We're with Angie Craig, representative from southern suburbs of the Twin Cities. I'm Blois Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take. As we wrap here, Representative, you brought up a good issue. Like, if Democrats want to move these bills faster or farther, they need more seats, and they certainly need to hold the House next year. You know, we're a year out. I do not make election predictions a year out, but obviously the president's had some challenges. What do you hear in your district, not just about this bill, but about kind of the president and or what people really are worried about today that may be different than a year ago when you were reelected?
Well, boys, you and I are in the same camp on this one, too. I don't think anyone can predict what's going to happen in November of 2022 yet. And anyone who's claiming to didn't live through the 2020 election like I did. Look, the president has an agenda. That first agenda point was to do everything in his power to get vaccines distributed as quickly as possible. On that note, I would say that this administration gets very high marks. So he got, you know, that the distribution of the vaccine solved. But then we have the Delta variant. And so I think, you know, folks rightly so are still concerned about COVID. You know, the news out just before the weekend that 5 to 11-year-olds are going to be able to get the Pfizer vaccine. I think I can hear a collective sigh of relief coming from the suburbs that I represent. And at the end of the day, no matter who was in the White House, and I know this will be tough to see, but no matter who was in the White House, we were going to see significant supply chain issues. You know, the truth is we need to figure out how we get more manufacturing and more of our supply chain in the United States. A lot of these Southeastern Asian countries, China, they were hit hard by COVID. They either shut down manufacturing or they scaled it back. And so the shipping companies, they scaled their work back. And guess what? America did better than most countries. And we've got money to spend right now on our economy. And that is going to clog up the supply chain. So, look, there are a lot of slogans in politicians. Most of these issues are a lot more complicated than, you know, either the Democratic or Republican Party would have them be. And at the end of the day, boys, I'm just going to keep my head down. I'm going to do what I said I would do to my voters. And that means I'm going to fight to lower the cost of health care. I'm going to keep supporting rural communities, whether I won them or not in the election, and family farmers. And I'm going to keep working on behalf of my small businesses to make sure that, You know, they stay in business. We did a lot of work on that through the pandemic, but also we need a workforce, so we need the job skills to match up. And at the end of the day, voters get to have their say, and I think the voters of the second district are pretty damn smart, and that they can figure out that I've got my head down and I'm working on their behalf.
Thank you, Representative Angie Craig. When we come back on Sunday Take, why are liquor bills so hard to pass in Minnesota? We'll have Minority Leader Kurt Dowd and Zach Stevenson on that topic here on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joining me now is Minority Leader Kurt Dowd, Minnesota House. He and others are watching carefully and working hard on liquor bills. And in my 20 plus years of watching the legislature, liquor bills seem to be more complicated than they need to be to your average Minnesotan. It's the kind of issue that I get asked about by neighbors, by at the hockey rink, at the golf course. Why can't we buy liquor on Sundays? Well, now we have that solved. And now there's a ton of other issues, from growler sales to 3-2 beer, that are deep in discussion. And we're deep in discussion this week at the legislature. And joining me for part of this conversation is Kurt Dowd. And then we'll have Representative Stevenson on in the next segment. But Kurt, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Blaise. Appreciate the opportunity.
You've been around the legislature a long time. You and I have talked about this. It's 3-2 beer has always been a Minnesota specialty, if you want to call it that, but now they're stopping making it. And now convenience stores might not have products. And it just seems like to me that this is one of those everyday issues that Minnesotans kind of look at the legislature and scratch their head and wonder why it's so hard to pass liquor bills. What's the history and what's your sense of why we need 3.5-hour hearings on liquor when it's not even the session?
Yeah, you know, I think part of the problem is that they, you know, had been holding off having any hearings on any liquor bills in the Commerce Committee. And it seems like it's been a couple of years since they've had any hearings. So I think there was a little bit of a backlog and yep, some pressure building up. So they just decided to do them all at once and probably do them in an interim hearing where, you know, there wasn't pressure to necessarily pass them out. Then they can kind of think about them and make some decisions on what they want to advance or if they want to advance any of them. And I assume there's some negotiating going on between the interested parties. You know, on the issue of beer and wine and gas stations and grocery stores, I think that this is an issue much like Sunday liquor sales. And as you know, I was yes, Jennifer Loon was really the driver behind that, but I was probably right behind her and being the one that pushed it the most to actually get it done. And I was Speaker of the House at the time. I think with Sunday liquor sales, the public was able to get behind that because on Sundays they couldn't buy it and they just couldn't understand why. Yep. And it seemed antiquated, right? So on this one, you know, people still can buy beer, regular strength beer. They can now buy it on Sundays. It used to be too, that when you couldn't buy, you know, on Sundays, there was some pressure building up, but now, you know, people can buy on Sundays. They can buy regular strength beer on Sundays in a liquor store. Now it's kind of more of a convenience thing. So I don't think that the public, support has grown to the same level that it did with Sunday liquor sales, but I anticipate that it will. You know, you've got 45 other states that do this. Every single state around us does it. It just, you know, and I constantly get phone calls from people asking, you know, why is it that we can't do this here in Minnesota? I was just in such and such a state, and you know, they have it in their gas stations and their grocery stores. It just seems so convenient. The players behind it, I think, are really driving some of the, you know, people being locked into their positions, whether it be the beer wholesalers or other, you know, distributors or those sorts of things. The municipal liquor stores, the liquor store owners obviously are fighting that. On the other side, you've got the retailers and the grocers that would like to see that. My own personal opinion is I think it's going to happen eventually. And frankly, I don't think you'll see the sort of damage or harm to liquor stores that they're predicting. You know, we certainly didn't with Sunday liquor sales. They were predicting the same kind of doom and gloom with Sunday liquor sales, and that didn't end the world. So I have a feeling it's going to pass eventually. I don't know that we've reached that critical mass yet.
Right.
But, you know, we'll keep working on it.
Well, and it's not even, I mean, you can be as partisan as anybody and, you know, watching kind of polarization, but this isn't an issue that cuts across party lines per se, because when you guys are in the majority, it's hard to pass this stuff too.
Yeah.
Is it relationships? Is it this three-tier system that it gets charted out that normal people don't even understand? Or is it just the diversity of Minnesota? And then finally, you're from a rural part. I'm from a suburban part. Or is there still like this kind of teetotaler Minnesota thing going on?
You know, I think it's all of those factors. You know, with my own members in my caucus, one of the big things has been, gosh, you know, we have municipal liquor stores and the people from my city, my mayor and my city council members don't want me to do this. You know, and then I always come right back with them and say, well, you've got one mayor and, you know, four or five city council members. How many people do you have in your district, you know, real people, your neighbors that own gas stations, grocery stores that would benefit from this? And then they say, oh yeah, that's right. You know, there's more constituents on the other side of this thing. So and part of it too, I think it is that three-tier system, and that we've had folks that have really defended that three-tier system for so long. And I think historically members are just kind of a little bit dug in. You know, I'll remind folks, I probably shouldn't remind folks, but originally I was on the other side of Sunday sales. I was against opening it up, and not for the reason on liquor, but, you know, I worked in the car business for many years, and that's the other thing where there's still a blue law in place where you can't sell a car on a Sunday, and nobody that works at a car dealership wants to be open on a Sunday. Right. So that's why I was in that position.
I know.
Once I realized that there was a lot of support for the liquor stores, we did that. And I always fooled myself into thinking that, boy, once liquor stores went, then car dealerships would be right behind. But the public isn't necessarily demanding that they have to buy a car on a Sunday. So that has seemed to have died.
3-2 is one of the hot buttons that's kind of, you know, sparking this conversation now. I know you have followed this very closely. What should listeners know about where 3-2 beer availability is and why it's important that this is addressed sooner rather than later?
It was not too many years ago. I think even when we did Sunday liquor sales, which was maybe three or 4 years ago.
Yep.
But when we did that, you know, at the time, there were probably four or five states that still had 3-2 beer. We are now the last one. There's no other state that sells 3-2 beer. In fact, Utah was a holdout for a long time. Even they have full strength beer now in their gas stations and grocery stores, I think. So, there is no other state that does 3-2 beer. So the manufacturers are, cutting down. We took testimony in that hearing the other day, they used to have, gosh, I think it was a year ago, they had 90 SKUs that they could choose from. That's, you know, SKU numbers, individual products that they could sell on the store shelves that met the requirements of that 3-2 beer. Now they're down to 14. And it won't be long. Manufacturers are just going to say, come on, it's just not worth it for us to produce this product anymore. And the reality is, I don't think gas stations and grocery stores sell a ton of 3-2 beer. So it, you know, it's not a major thing for them. I also just frankly don't think that gas stations and grocery stores are going to give up a lot of shelf space to carry a lot of full strength beer and wine. I think they'll have just a very limited supply for a convenience factor. And as you know, buying a 20 ounce soda in a gas station is not the cheapest place you can buy a 20 ounce soda, right? I mean,
right.
You know, so, I mean, it's not like, I still think that the regular liquor stores are going to be the place to buy this if you're buying in any quantity. If you're picking up just one 12 pack, sure, I can grab it quick here and I'm going to pay, you know, 30% more than I would in the liquor store. But when people are really buying it, they're going to buy it in a liquor store where they still do.
Kurt Dout's our guest. Kurt, thanks for joining us. I know we'll have this conversation as we go on why liquor laws are so hard to change here in Minnesota.
Yeah, they sure are. They can be, but we'll keep working on it. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. When we come back, we're going to talk to Chairman Zach Stevenson. He held the hearing this week. He's looked at all these bills, and there are more bills than just 3-2. And so we'll dive into that with Zach Stevenson next on Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to Sunday Take. My next guest is Zach Stevenson. He's a state representative. He's also the chair of the House Commerce Commission or committee. And he held a hearing this past week on liquor. As we just talked to Representative Dout about this, Representative Stevenson has put a lot of thought into this. He's had a lot of people knock on his door or knock on his Zoom in the last year about changes to Minnesota's liquor laws. And he's with us now to kind of frame up where he thinks this could go in the next legislative session. Representative Stevenson, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So you held a hearing this last Wednesday. There were a lot of bills in a almost 4-hour hearing. You actually got done early. What is kind of all the collective liquor bills from little to small? And as a chairman of that Commerce Committee, how do you view kind of, I'd say, framing the debate or the discussion into legislation during the next session?
Well, you know, it all starts with this. We have in Minnesota this phenomenal and growing craft industry, craft breweries, craft distilleries that Minnesotans really value. Minnesotans like going to a brewery on a nice day like today. I'm looking outside. It's beautiful. It'd be a great day to sit by a bonfire in a patio at a brewery. And they like going to a craft distillery, maybe for a date night and having a custom cocktail. Those are experiences that we enjoy and have really enjoyed more and more as those industries have boomed in the last few years. At the same time, the liquor industry is a very structured, regulated industry in Minnesota, and for good reason. There are some important public policy considerations that are very closely tied to liquor. Chief among them is public safety, right? And we can think about that both in the context of what we experience today, where we see that liquor has important public safety, you know, on the roads and keeping it out of the hands of young people and all sorts of ways that alcohol can contribute to crime. But also historically, of course, there's a long legacy in this state and other places of what can go wrong when you let the liquor market go a certain way, right? When we're talking right. about organized crime and other things. So we do have a really robust system of laws around liquor and these two pieces, the craft and then the existing legal structure, come into conflict. They're rubbing against each other. And we're always trying to figure out how to balance the desire to help these innovative businesses that people really like with making sure that we're still advancing the public policy goals that we have around public safety, as I already mentioned, but also consumer protection, also consumer choice. I mean, there are legitimate things that we worry about that we want to make sure that we're taking care of in this very special marketplace around liquor.
Zach Stevenson's my guest here on Sunday Take. Let's talk about history just for a second. You know, organized crime, regulations, you know, we are coming out of prohibition. Like many laws, that created a system of regulation. And I'll just say those people who are part of that system are most likely the most resistant to change. Are there other examples of regulated industries that have had to change that maybe the liquor regulation could look at and say, well, it happened in that industry, I guess we can live with it? Or is it too self-interested, or is it too kind of ingrained in distribution and the business model to change quickly, or to, you know, kind of hoist this upon them?
Well, boys, keep in mind, there has been tremendous change in the liquor industry in the last couple of decades. And I don't just mean in terms of what's happening in the marketplace, but also in our laws. The entire existence of cocktail rooms, of growlers, these are things that didn't exist in Minnesota until very recently in our history. So there is change, and there is an evolution. And that's something, you know, I think a lot of people think of these laws as something that date back to the 1940s. But a lot of the issues we're dealing with, if we're talking about the growler issue, I mean, that's something that just happened in the last couple decades.
Yeah.
I also want to say that some of the problems that we are trying to solve with laws that are old still exist in the world in other places that don't have the same laws that we have. Let me give you an example. You know, we really are lucky in Minnesota. Maybe lucky isn't the right word, because it's deliberate. It's because of our laws. But we are fortunate that when you go into your favorite bar or restaurant, you know, you can have pretty broad choice. I mean, you can they'll have a half dozen beers on tap, lots of bottles, everything else. You can choose your different brands. If you've ever been to a bar, for example, in Amsterdam, you might have seen something entirely different, where they have, you know, Amstel bars and Heineken bars. And at the Amstel bar, all you can buy is Amstel. And at the Heineken bar, all you can buy is Heineken, because they have merged. They are vertically integrated between who produces the beer, who distributes the beer, and who sells the beer. It's all the same thing. We don't have that, because we have this regulated marketplace that breaks apart the people who sell the beer to the public from the people who make the beer. And that allows more choice for consumers. And we know that isn't just something that happened back in the day before Prohibition, or during Prohibition, or shortly after. You know, it's something that is happening elsewhere in the world right now.
As we look ahead, obviously there's the public, there's the industry, there's the owners, the business owners, liquor stores, microbreweries, tap rooms, distilleries. How do you see the path forward for, in the House at least, which you can have some influence over, how do you see the path forward to try to move and make progress in the next year, or in the next session?
Well, we've got to find common ground, and I think it's there. I'm actually incredibly optimistic. I have spent this whole interim traveling all across the state, talking to people all the way up in Ely, all the way down in New Ulm, all places in between. I've talked to producers, I've talked to distributors, I've talked to retailers. I'm talking to everybody and anybody about this, trying to find how can we solve some of these problems that people are frustrated that we can't solve, the growler issue, the cocktail room issue. How can we help the smallest breweries and distilleries? That's in the House, in my caucus, that's what we are most focused on, is how can we help the smallest breweries and distilleries grow. The ones that are in everyone's district, in everyone's backyard, where everyone likes to go on a nice day like today, we want to help them. And I think there is a path to doing that. We're going to have to make some compromises. No one's going to get everything that they want. But I, right now, am encouraging everyone to come to the table and be at the table and talk in good faith. The path forward is, I think, sometime as we get closer to session, we'll start to look at concrete packages of, you know, we heard 28 bills earlier this week. They're not all going to be part of the conversation during session. They're not all going to be part of a liquor bill that passes, but I think some of them will be. And we're going to start putting together packages. And then when we get into session, we'll have a very public debate, you know, the traditional type that you have at the legislature.
One other issue I talked to Representative Dowd about is obviously we're the only state where 3-2 beer is still out there and being sold or required to be sold. Ever since I was a kid, that was always one of those annoyances, I'd say, or people from other states don't get it. Since we're the only state, do you think that's one of the issues that'll change?
So, you know, we're the only state. We're not the only state where you can buy 3-2 beer, first of all. Right. There is still a market for that. And in fact, non-alcoholic or near beer drinks, low-alcoholic drinks are the fast, believe it or not, that's the fastest growing area in the liquor industry. It is a puzzle. We're going to work on it. I'll just tell you, there's another issue around 3-2 that I've been telling people about that I never, because I was talking to someone about this several months ago, and I said, who's buying 3-2 beer? I said, I lived in Minnesota my whole life. I don't think I've ever bought 3-2 beer. And the person said to me, Zach, you absolutely have bought 3-2 beer. And I said, no, I have not. And he said, yes, you have. You just didn't know it, because there's a lot of bars out there. They don't advertise that they're selling you 3-2 beer. They're selling you beer that you don't know, that they don't have a strong beer license. So the beer you had was 3-2. And I said, that's outrageous. We need a consumer protection bill. We need a beer bill, right? Like, you should know.
I should know that I'm being served weak beer.
You have a right to know, is my view. So I don't know what we're going to do yet on 3-2 beer. We're going to work on it.
Well, I know this isn't the last time we're going to talk about this, and I really appreciate you joining me on the Sunday Take. We'll stay tuned as this bill takes shape and advances. And of course, I want to just remind listeners that there's a Senate that I'd have to get through too, right, Zach?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
Sounds good. This is the Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. When we come back, what else is happening in Minneapolis that isn't about politics? Former Mayor R.T. Ryback will join me on News Talk 830 WCCO. For the final cup of coffee here on Sunday Take, I want to talk about just all that is Minneapolis right now. And there's probably no better person to talk about that from a community standpoint, from a political standpoint, and somebody who talks to business leaders. And that's former Mayor R.T. Ryback. Mayor, thanks for joining me.
Happy to be here, boys.
So, Mayor, we'll talk a little bit about politics first. You know, there's three ballot questions, two of them getting a lot of attention that you probably have some very direct experience with. The question number one related to the governance of the city. Question number two on public safety. Obviously, these are very heated conversations, but they're in a little bit of a bubble. But as you and I have talked over the years, Minneapolis is a regional hub. So even if you don't live in Minneapolis, you think about these things. You wonder about these things. Where do you think those questions should land when voters end Tuesday, and why?
Well, you know, I'm really proud of my city. And I think that's the sort of thing that is a simple thing to say and a big thing to say right now, because, you know, I have a lot of friends who live outside of Minneapolis. I know a lot of people who live outside of Minneapolis, and they say, oh, what's going on in Minneapolis? Well, what's going on in Minneapolis is a conversation that should be had in this country about what is fair and equitable, what is safety, how do we get those things done? There are, this is a moment in which we've all chosen to turn over the rock. And what I mean by that is that I would be a lot more depressed if we were in this moment of time and we weren't looking at big questions like race, like gender, like safety. And what does that mean? So, yeah, it's tough as heck right now. But a couple things. First, I'm deeply involved in what's been a very inspirational coalition that's formed around how do we rebuild. I'm you know, also part of a foundation where work led by our leader of impact, Shonda Smith Baker, has really looked at innovative ways to look at criminal justice reform. We just came off a big effort on the intersection of climate and equity. And, you know, these aren't small things.
Right.
And I think one of the things that when I look back to, you know, a year and a half ago, and I remember sitting at my desk, and it smelled of smoke because there had been fires all night, and I saw projects I'd worked on burn down and the city I love ripping apart. I felt a lot like I had been pushing a rock up a hill for 5 decades of my entire working career. And that rock had rolled over me and flattened me, and we're back where we started. half a century ago. And I just, the despair was almost more than I could take. And I've had some time to reflect on that, that right now what I feel is yes. And I've got it in me to start pushing that rock again. But more important is I don't have to push it alone, or even more important, those of us who pushed it have a lot more partners now. That if we build a broader coalition, that we recognize that it's not good enough to just be a great place for most people, but everybody, we're going to push up a bigger hill. It's harder what we have to do now, which is to do all these things that make a great city and make it fair and equitable for everyone. That's like huge, but none of us have to do it alone. And that's, I think right now it's a moment in which we can say, we've got a different outcome here, and it's better. So I'm pushing that rock right now, and I'm not alone.
So like when you're doing anything heavy and hard, when you think about the hope and you talk to particularly corporate leaders, because I know you talk to a lot of them, what do they feel? Because I think there's this thing about, let's think about the rock and we're going to get over the hill. So keep this metaphor going. And, but nobody knows quite what's on the other side of the hill because it hasn't been, you know, it hasn't been seen yet. And I think there's a lot of anxiety in the community about, oh no, if we push the rock too far, it's going to go do something. Or if it comes back, it might come back on us. But I talk to business leaders, you talk to business leaders, and I think there's this we can do it attitude. And but they know they can't be the only ones pushing, and they're probably not the right ones to decide the future. But investments, actual capital investments, jobs, things like that, those decisions about where we're going to invest and if it's going to be in Minneapolis are real. What do you tell them and what do you hear from them?
Well, there are two different trains running at the same time with that group of people. One is, wow, I don't know what the heck's going on. I'm going to run. I'm scared, et cetera, et cetera. The other, and I think this is actually the dominant piece of it because I have evidence of that, is I want to help me figure out how, because there's a different landscape now. Yep. So example, earlier this week, I was at Bloomington and Lake Street. And I was there with David Mortensen, one of those business leaders. David's response when those fires and destruction took place wasn't to run, but it was to say to very quietly take five people from Mortensen Construction, one of the largest, best construction companies in the country. Five of them, just not trying to get any business, just go out on West Broadway and Lake Street and Midway and St. Paul, start building relationships and do whatever the heck it takes. So quietly, they started working on insurance claims and put boards up or down, do new security, rebuild the thing that's burnt, you know, and they built a map of every single building up and down Lake Street and what needs to be done. And then Rod Young, another business leader, leads Delta Dental, said, okay, we'll put money in. So the two of them put in, Delta Dental put in $5 million. They started this fund at the Minneapolis Foundation, we now call the Restore, Rebuild, Reimagine Fund. Target put money in, Donaldson put money in. Few others have put money in, some anonymous. They're moving to help on this because they recognize we now have a strategy and a plan on how to do this. Not perfect, because we got to get more people involved. You know, that idea of more people pushing the rock, you got to convince a lot more people. But that's a part of my job and others people's job, is to make it easier for people who don't know how to navigate this stuff to get involved. So we raised $10 million for that. We then brought in, just got a state grant of $20 million. We've deployed about $4 million already, right away, to get some of these businesses opened. Yep. And so there are some who just are really freaked out. And I think part of this breaks generationally. Absolutely. That it's never been more clear about that. Those of us who have smart, disruptive kids who get in our face don't understand why it's taken so long to create racial equity. Don't understand why we haven't done more on climate. Don't understand why we are not disrupting a system that has too much wealth concentrating at the top. And they're very impatient. So now there's a third category, and I'll stop blabbing about this. But there's this other category that sees all that. That's so great. These young people, they're going to get us out of the mess. Hell no. You wouldn't like say at your house, your yeah. house is falling down and you'd hand the kids to your key with 100,000 of repairs and say, go fix it because I believe in you. Our generation cannot leave this moment without addressing this. We need the perspective of the next generation. We need their help. Yeah. We can't throw them the keys to a broken down house. So I'm way up for this. And I think we should be listening to our kids a lot right now.
No, I think that's right. As we wrap here, I'm talking to former Mayor R.T. Ryback, and I think it's a important final conversation here on Sunday Take before we get to Election Day and before we look back. When you wake up on Wednesday or maybe Thursday because of ranked choice voting and we have everything settled, no matter what happens, what do you tell somebody who's thinking about either investing in the city, working in the city, buying a house in the city, when they're worried about public safety, they're worried about jobs, or they're just not sure? What do you tell them as somebody on the ground in the city right now?
I tell them we're addressing serious issues, but the narrative is absurdly over the top for what it is. I'm downtown Minneapolis every day. It is not like gangs of New York walking around here. There are issues, and we address that just like there are issues all over the place. More important, this city that has come through incredible places and became one of the few vital downtowns in the entire country for decades, will continue to do that. We're building on a very strong foundation. We need to get all the people back into the workforce. We need to get that moving. We need to obviously have improvements in safety and such, but just take a breath, okay? Whatever happens in this election is not going to be transformational, honestly. There's a lot more work that needs to be done. And more important, there's a lot of good work. Drive down Lake Street right now, and it's dramatically better. It's going to have to get better. You know, this is Minneapolis. We've survived a whole lot, and we are definitely going to survive this.
Well, thanks for that message, because I do think that, you know, whether it's the Twitter bubble or whatever, that people do get too worked up about these things. So,
could I Mayor R.T. Ryback,
go ahead.
Yeah, I mentioned us raising private dollars. If people go to the Restore, Rebuild, Reimagine Fund.com or just RRRfund.com, they'll see a video there about the people we're standing with. And it's one by one, these business leaders from different communities who are entrepreneurs who built these streets. Take a look at that at RRRfund.com, and it'll tell you what we're really about. It's not like R.T. Ryback's going to rebuild Lake Street. It's the Cambodian woman who got past the Khmer Rouge, and this is not going to stop her now. You know, that's who we're standing with. That's what this city is about. So don't let like a blip that happened, serious blip, but still on the history, we're on the right side of history and we've got the right components. So just breathe and let's go out and make it better.
Breathe is always good advice. Mayor Ryback, thanks for joining us on Sunday Take.
Thanks, boys.
And if you're listening, and you just caught part of the show, you can go to WCCORadio.com. You can download the Odyssey app or check out the newsletters at fluence-newsletters.com. I'll put a link to the RRR Fund in Minneapolis in the Morning Take on Monday. But thanks for listening. When it's Sunday and it's 9 o'clock, we're talking Minnesota politics on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.